Today is Wednesday, August 30th, 2006. My name is Sandra Fehler, and I am an interviewer with the University of Wisconsin-Madison Oral History Project. Today, I am interviewing Dr. Jean Johnson. Dr. Johnson attended the University of Wisconsin-Madison from 1967 to 1971. In 1967, she was a research project director in the School of Nursing, and she received her doctorate degree in psychology from UW-Madison in 1971. In 1998, Dr. Johnson returned to the University of Wisconsin as a visiting professor in the School of Nursing. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We'll start the questions with your early life. If you could talk about where and when you were born, talk about your childhood, your early schooling, talk about any family members or teachers or other people who encouraged you in your studies.
Okay. Well, I was born in Kansas on a farm at the end of the road, literally, and went to a one-room schoolhouse through seventh grade. And then there were only two students, and so we had to go into town, which was 5.5 miles away. And attended high school, and that went to the grade school, of course, for 1 year, and then the little rural high school. There were 13 in my high school class. And see, I graduated in 1943, so it was right during the war. I'm the youngest of 9 children, and there were 4 girls. The oldest girl died when I was 6 years old. And all the rest lived into adulthood. Well, she was an adult too. And all my brothers are gone now, but the 3 sisters are still living. I have one that's 97 and one that's 90, and then there's me. So I had an interesting childhood growing up with boys, which I think had a great influence on me. They taught me everything. I learned how to fix Model T Fords and shoot rabbits. And they had to babysit me, so they took me with them wherever they went. I enjoyed school. I really always liked school. I could hardly wait for school to start again. And all my brothers had gone to college. They all were either become veterinarians or at one time were in veterinarian school at Kansas State. So when it come time, but none of my sisters went to college. One was a secretary, had gone to a business school, and the other two were school teachers. But they didn't, you know, get a degree. They just went and got their certificates, whatever, at that time. My mother was a school teacher, too. So my mother wanted me to go to college. And so she talked my dad into letting me go to college if I studied home economics, because then I would make a good wife. So I went to Kansas State. And
now how far away was that from your home?
Oh, that was, I guess it's only about, seemed long ways, but I think it was probably only 60 or 70 miles. Mm-hmm. Was it? In today's terms, it was relatively close, but mm-hmm. It was a long ways from that farm, I can tell you. Because when I went down to Tulsa, where my next oldest sister was living at the time, and worked in Douglas Aircraft Factory to earn enough money to pay my tuition to go to school. And my sister and brother-in-law had to actually teach me how to cross the street. I had never seen a street light, and didn't know how to manage city life at all. So I was really naive. And the first week I was in college, my brother was still in college. He was in ROTC because it was during the war, as I said. And my parents, or my mother probably, had made him promise that he would check on me every day, because I didn't know how to go to a restaurant or meals. You know, I'd never been anywhere without either my father or at least 2 brothers. And so I grew up in a hurry.
Where did you live? Did you live in private housing?
I lived in a boarding room type of a thing, where you usually worked for part of your board or and room, and washing dishes and waiting tables in the morning. The women would shed some. They had rooms they rent out, and then they had a table, big dining room table, and fed kids, you know, and meal ticket kinds of things. And instead of going to the school cafeteria, they would find who was the best cook in town and go to theirs. So we ate well, you know, we always had access to the leftovers, and if you were studying, you could go down and get coffee and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of nice.
So you financed your undergraduate education?
Yes, almost all of it. I worked in Douglas Aircraft summers. In my program is home economics and nursing. And so I went to Kansas State for 2.5 years, and then I went to the hospital for 2.5 years. And I became a nurse quite by accident, because when I was enrolling, I had to choose whether it was going to be a straight home ec degree or whether it was going to be home ec and nursing, and I didn't know which to choose. And so a little freshman signing there said to me, "Well, flip a coin." And so I literally did. And that's how I became a nurse. I just never changed it.
And that was okay with your parents?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't know I had to make a choice. Home economics. She went and learned how to cook and sew or whatever, home economics, what their idea of what home economics would be, I'd make a good wife. And that's the way my mother sold it to my father. Because I was such a spoiled little thing, I'm sure he thought I would never. So that was how I got started.
Then what, was it a good education as far as your...
Yes, I think it was. Home economics department. I learned lots of exciting. I learned about experimental cooking, and of course, I had to take all the basic courses. And all my brothers had gone there, and so some of these basic courses. My maiden name was Irwin. When they got to the call roll in those days, they got to Irwin, it was red flags all over everywhere, because they had been so angry and disruptive to the classes, and here was another Irwin, and I'm sure they were relieved to see at least I was a girl. So my brothers made a trail for me to follow, but they also were responsible for me being quite a risk taker, because they would always bail me out. You know, if I had a brother around, I could do anything, because I knew that they would rescue me if I got into trouble.
So you moved over to the hospital.
Yeah, went over to Kansas City.
Okay, and then is that where you, that was the nursing part?
That was the nursing part. Education. We joined what was then the diploma nurses, 3-year only. We were ahead of them, and we started immediately into our clinical. And that was a very interesting experience, because it was during the war. The nurses had all gone off to the war. There was almost no nurses in the hospital, and so we hadn't been there 6 weeks, and myself and my roommate were in charge of this unit. I'll never forget it. Oh my, it was just a nightmare. And that was when, you know, you had to mix up the IVs, put the glucose had to figure out how much glucose to put into the saline. And it was just a nightmare. And then to add to it all, the night nurse came on to relieve us. And of course, we were just so relieved to get rid of this that we didn't have the slightest idea what we were doing. And she was drunk.
Oh my.
So, but there was always a supervisor on, so we called the supervisor, and we got off duty. I don't know who came on to take care of those patients, but that was one shift I will never forget.
Yeah.
And lots of other experiences, but that was a nightmare. we still both vividly remember that, my roommate and I. So, but other than that, we did. We had a very good, well, no, the educational program wasn't all that good as far as the teachers went, but there was plenty of opportunity to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I never cracked a single one of my textbooks. I was beyond what was in the textbooks.
Oh, yeah.
I'd already had, and that, I deducted what to do from the basic sciences that I had gotten at Kansas State, because I had chemistry and anatomy and physiology, and microbiology, and I didn't do so well in rhetoric, but I did very well in those other things. And so I deducted what one should do
mm-hmm.
basically from my basic sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess even then I was thinking like a scientist.
Well, then the people that were already in the program at the hospital, how did they get there? Did they have to take the sciences then through the
They took the sciences at the, in the diploma programs, the sciences and everything were taught at the hospital.
Oh, I see.
And of course it was a watered down kind of
a
thing. And they were younger than us because they came right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And there were only four of us in that, the three of us that had degree, were working in the degree program.
Mm-hmm.
And we were 2.5 years older than they, because we'd been out of high school for 2.5, 3 years. And at a time when that makes a lot, you know, there's a lot of difference between 18 and 20.
Oh, yeah.
So we never, they always resented us, the diploma nurses. Mm-hmm. To this day, they don't like us very much.
Well, what did you do then when you got your degree? What came next?
At that time, I was a little bit in debt. I had borrowed some money from my father. I hadn't been able to. I was in the last group of the nursing corps. What was that called? Cadet nurses.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have uniforms because they quit issuing those, but we were the very last group. So they bought our books, paid our tuition, and gave us a little stipend, about $30 a month or something like that, which was pretty good.
Now, they meaning the government?
Government.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so that helped, but it, when I got out of school, owed my father about, I think it was $2,500. Mm-hmm. And of course, he knew I'd never pay it back. And so we were, you know, interested in earning enough money. My roommate also had some debts. So this hospital in Sioux City, Iowa, offered us to a job to teach, because we had baccalaureate degrees, and only about 10% of the nurses at that time had baccalaureate degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, we knew absolutely nothing about teaching. But the salary was just fabulous for the time. I think it was $250 a month, but it was almost double of what we were going to get anywhere else.
Huh.
So we went, and it was a nightmare. And we accepted the job in the spring, and we were to go in the fall. By the time fall came, we didn't want to go.
Oh.
You know, but we had to go. So we went, and we tried to teach, and we were a disaster. And we thought we would be okay, because they had a nurse in charge of the program who had her master's degree in education. So we thought she would, you know, guide us and help us and mm-hmm. to learn how to teach. Well, she was insane. And we finally realized that this woman was kooky.
Uh-oh.
And so we went to talk to Miss Arnold. She was the sweetest thing. She was the director of all the nursing there, and explained to her some of the things that had been happening. And at Christmas time, this lady was locked up in a mental hospital. So we didn't get much help from her.
No.
But we did. We got through the year. I guess we had signed 3-year contracts, and they would not let us out of the contract because they had nobody to replace us. So we had to stay for 3 years. But at the end of the third year, we were out of there. I got married. I had met a man there in Sioux City, and I married that summer, and my roommate Norma went to Boston to get her master's degree. So, but until then, we had been together all through our training years, and mm-hmm. those 3 years in Sioux City, and we're still very, very close friends. So, but we couldn't get, I haven't been back to Sioux City.
Now, you were teaching the diploma program then?
Diploma nurses. Okay.
Yeah. All right, so what did you do after that then?
Well, I went to Denver and taught again, actually. This was when there was a big push for nurses to get their master's degrees. And Loretta Heights College hired me to teach to relieve the teachers so they could go get their master's degree.
I see.
And so that went on for several years. And I also taught a 3-year program at Presbyterian Hospital. And there, one of the nurses had a master's degree, and I learned a lot from her. And
I'm sorry to interrupt, was that full-time teaching?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I quit for a while. I quit and just stay home. I quit in the spring, and by fall, right before the holidays, and I'd always been so disgusted that, I did some nursing, staff nursing also while I was in Colorado, quite a little bit of staff
okay.
nursing.
Okay, I see.
I was not really a very good staff nurse, but I did enjoy doing that. After I taught, I went back and did staff nursing,
mm-hmm.
and that was good. It was a good experience. And I was going to stay home, and by fall I just couldn't stand it. So I called, I guess it was the hospital where I'd been doing staff nursing, and did on-call nursing. Well, it wasn't long until I was working full-time again, right before the holidays. And then I was divorced, and I was took a job as... I wanted to say staff nursing, and my doctor said, no, you're not going to, you got to do something that will be more challenging. So I took a job as in-service education coordinator.
And that was still in Denver?
And still in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I got divorced and recovered from the shock of that and got myself squared back around again, I realized I had to get serious about making a living. So that was when I started investigating master's programs, and there were about nine around. I could go anywhere in the United States because I had no real ties,
mm-hmm.
and there were about nine. And I read the catalogs carefully because I did not want to go back and have to make up undergraduate community health nursing. Go back and take an undergraduate course in community health nursing. I thought I really didn't need to do that.
But that was part of a lot of these programs?
Yeah, and I hadn't had it in my undergraduate.
Oh, okay.
I see. I'd had the theory, but I had not gone out and carried the bag out in
mm-hmm.
community.
Mm-hmm.
And I had had a short experience, a 2-week sort of in-service kind of a thing with a community health nurse. And so I was not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I admitted I was not going to do that. And when I make up my mind I'm not going to do anything, I usually don't. And Yale was the only school that didn't require that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know where Yale was. I'd asked the librarian where Yale was. And their only two programs was psychiatric nursing and maternal. Well, I knew I wasn't going to go into maternal nursing. That was one thing I did not like. And that was back when they had liaison, where between psychiatric nursing and medical surgical nursing to help with the psychological aspects of physical illness.
Uh-huh.
So I trotted my little self off to Yale in 1960. And naively went there on like a Thursday or Friday before school started, thinking I could find a place to live. finally found a place way, you know, down the turnpike quite a ways. But Yale was a very, very enlightening experience, and that was where I discovered research.
Uh-huh.
That's where I met the psychology department. Leventhal was involved with the School of Nursing, and I had written this grant for a 2-year project, and it was funded. So Leventhal learned about my project and how good it was from some of his colleagues that were on the review committee.
I see.
And he was interested in getting involved in doing research in the healthcare system. So he sent his postdoc over to work with me on this grant.
Now, what was the grant?
The grant was to figure out how to measure anxiety in surgical patients. Because that was before the anxiety measures had been developed, the verbal report anxiety measures. And I had discovered this Palmer Sweat Index, which you mix this goop up with a black, I don't know if it's ink or what we put in it, and a plastic mixed up. We made plastic was what we did.
Mm-hmm.
I got some poly something or other from the industry. Got it for nothing, and because I just need. They use it by the ton, and I just mm-hmm. needed a little cup of it, and then used a cork and you put it on finger. And where the sweat glands were sweating, it wouldn't adhere. And then you used Scotch tape, pulled it off, put it on a slide, and looked at it through microscope, and you counted the number of sweat glands. And so the more sweat glands, the more anxiety.
Oh, how interesting.
And so I did a whole bunch of little tests with that, and including Jim, the postdoc, Jim Dabbs, was learning to fly, or had his license, I guess. So we even did some before afters on the taking people up in the plane. And I used my classmates and the faculty members for running experiments, and I'd make them take a mood agity checklist every morning, and then I would take their sweat glands, see if there was any correlation. And and then I also collected data on surgical patients using the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but in addition to other information, of course, about them. And they're not too terribly much. I had a scale I was trying to validate with surgical patients, and that just bombed. That was the last time I ever tried to develop a scale. The Palmer Sweat Index was at the people have picked it up and used it, but I concluded that it didn't measure anything except arousal. It didn't matter what the arousal was from.
I see.
Because I hadn't thought about this in years. One study where I had my classmates working mathematical problems. And I don't remember just why I selected that. Perhaps because anxiety, with women, the anxiety of math or
yeah.
something. And I periodically, you know, while they were working on these, take their measure their Palmer sweat, and then as soon when they finished, took it again. Well, the only thing that happened was that when they finished, they started sweating. Well, they had been concentrating quietly here, and now they were getting ready to go off. And that convinced me it was nothing but just arousal. So I never really used, after that study, I don't think I used it in another study.
Mm-hmm.
I developed it, and I'd read about somewhere in the literature, it's somewhere over in England.
Now, who funded, what was it?
I wrote this grant,
yeah.
and it was the Division of Nursing at that time, which was part of the NIH.
Okay.
that funded it.
Uh-huh.
And that is a story too. The head of the division of nursing was visiting Yale while I was developing the grant.
Mm-hmm.
And so the dean of Yale wanted me to have a few minutes with her to talk about the grant. And so she was packing up to leave. She had her back to me at the window, and she wouldn't even turn and look at me. She just said, "What makes you think you can write a grant?"
Oh my.
I don't remember what happened after that, but I wrote the grant. And but then she became my champion, and she was the one who arranged for the grant to be moved to Wisconsin so I could start doctoral school.
But you finished your master's degree at Yale.
Yeah, and stayed on 2 years.
Okay, and that was in nursing?
In nursing.
Okay.
Stayed on 2 years and, you know, supported myself with at least the second year with this grant. I don't remember how I got supported the first year. Oh, I worked on a funded research grant. That's how it was funded.
And was it this introduction to research on your master's program that led you to continue?
Yeah, I just loved it. I had finally found what I was looking for in nursing.
Mm-hmm.
It was my bag. I had tried staff nursing, teaching, in-service education, and none of them really turned me on. I could do them all,
mm-hmm.
but none of them, after I'd done them for one or half a year, I'd been there and done that kind of a thing. But research was just so exciting. That the challenge, the intellectual challenge, as well as the hands-on that you have to do, I still really love either doing research or reviewing research or helping people with their research after all these things.
And were there any other schools that you considered besides Wisconsin?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
University of Colorado, it was right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I had been quite active in the Nursing Association, so I was kind of known in the community. And so I went for an interview with whoever the admission nurse was. And she said, "Well, you haven't had psychiatric nursing, so you can't come into the program." Well, I had had psychiatric nursing. "Well, your grades aren't good enough, you can't come in." So I said, "Well, it says on there that I'm Phi Kappa Phi." And so it became very obvious that they did not want me.
Well, why do you think that was?
Well, I was always a rebel.
Oh, I see. Okay, good for you.
I was on probation until I graduated from nursing. Because
mm-hmm.
I kept asking questions and challenging ways that they did things. It was not acceptable.
Well, was Wisconsin more well? Now, you applied to the nursing school at Wisconsin, no?
No, no, never did.
Okay, so you applied to the...
But the university, then when I came to Wisconsin for the doctoral program,
uh-huh.
Leventhal, who was a professor in psychology,
right. Okay.
Came here. He kept looking at school. He didn't get his tenure at Yale, so he was looking for a university. And every place he'd go off, he'd come back and he'd call me up and he'd say, "Gene, what about living in, And so I had no desire to get a PhD, but
uh-huh.
he had decided I was going to get one. And that he wanted to get into the health setting. He knew he had to have a nurse or a physician or somebody to help him in to doing research in the health setting. He knew he couldn't do it on his own, and he knew that psychology students didn't know the culture well enough to do it. He needed nurses. And at that time his wife was PhD in one of the basic sciences. She's
mm-hmm.
now MD. She got an MD after they came here.
Mm-hmm.
But so Leventhal, when he was going to come to Wisconsin, I thought, Yeah, I'm tired of the East Coast. You know, I'm really a Midwesterner, and it's been fun. I've enjoyed it, and I've learned a lot about different cultures and all that kind of thing. But I'm ready to go back to the Midwest. And besides that, he had never lived anywhere but the East, and I thought he needed somebody to help him out here in the Midwest. So when they were able to transfer my grant, I had gotten all the data, so all I had to do was analyze data. So that was easy to just bring the data and analyze it here. And but the psychology department didn't want to take me because I was 42 years old. And of course, there was a great demand for slots because that was during the Vietnam War.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. And the guys wanted to get into graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, and Leventhal finally said, well, you take her or I don't come. That's how wow. forceful he had to be in order to get. So they said, okay, but she can't use any of our resources. She has to support herself. So I wrote an RSA, National Research Service Awards grant, and that was at the time when they were the nursing division, again, at NIH, was interested in getting nurses go and study in the basic sciences so that they could go back to schools of nursing and establish and raise the level and quality of schools of nursing. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they quite envisioned them starting doctoral programs or not, but they may have at least. But at least, you know, so that the professors in the School of Nursing would be prepared like the professors in other departments.
Okay, I see.
And so these NRSAs were available, and of course I got one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I supported myself. And Leventhal had grant funds to help with the expenses of my research. So, mm-hmm.
So then you just continued in that same area in terms of your research?
Yeah. Then when I started studying psychology, I discovered theories, of course, and found that very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And started studying stress and how to alleviate the stress from physical illness or experiences with physical illness. And I did a whole bunch of laboratory studies and two, I think it was, clinical studies. So writing up for my dissertation was just a matter of selecting which studies I was going to. So by the time I had left here, I had, through that research, established the basic premise of what was all the rest of my research, which was what kind of information for warnings about what's going to happen to a person during a stressful exam or procedure or illness will reduce the stress.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back when patients weren't told anything.
Mm.
So this was very, now it's widely accepted. You know, people say you did research on, you know, but it was my research that did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really very simple. If people are told what they're going to experience on a sensory level, what they're going to see, hear, smell, you know, what is on a concrete level, what's going to happen to them, where they're going to go, how long it's going to last, they can get through some of the most noxious exams with a great deal of ease.
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing is taking them by surprise, and they understand it's whatever they feel, what it's, how unusual or anything it is, that's expected. That doesn't mean something has gone wrong. Everything is just running off as expected. And we tinkle with it as far as if they just know a few of the things, well, that be, and it is, because people are very good about building their cognitive representation, as we call it, of the experience, and through the did a lot of that through laboratory work, which I continued after I graduated, to continue with the laboratory work to tease out those things, and then moved into clinical settings, and had done clinical studies here on gastroendoscopy exams, and found that it worked. And
now, did you have a formal relationship then with the School of Nursing or the medical school?
No. They just knew me. They kept. I was in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And the director of nursing, Marie Zimmer. I'm not sure what. Maybe I knew Marie from somewhere before. But anyway, I knew her here. I may have known her from Colorado or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And. She found I wanted to do this clinical study, and I stay away from patients and nursing about so long that I got to get back
as
that pattern throughout my career. I can go not have any contact with hospitals and stuff for just so long, and then I got to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't want to do any more laboratory studies on students. I wanted to do real research.
Mm-hmm.
So Marie cased out where I told her what kind of situation I needed, and she introduced me to this Dr. Morrissey, who headed the clinic, and he was concerned about people's anxiety about the exam, and so it was just a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I convinced him, and remember, this was back when he didn't tell people anything, I convinced him to let me prepare his patients without him knowing what I was telling them. Because if you're going to be a scientist, you're going to do the endoscopy. You can't know what they're going to be doing. Okay, he'd go along with that. And as long as, if patients started refusing the exam, then we'd have to look into it. Well, of course, that just made sense. So nobody refused the exam. And we played the tape, showed him the data that he gave the patients less Valium, less sedative, with the experimental tape. I also had control tape, and by his own judgment, his patients did better when they had heard that information. Then I played the information for him, and he said, "I would never have allowed you to do that had I known." So, if I hadn't have gotten a physician who would go along with me, that work would have. It would have been many, many more years before that movement to tell patients things would have progressed. And now I've had occasion to do a little research on where the later studies on what that my work and my premises, and the only new work is all done overseas. It's all over the world now. So, and of course, they're back where we were when they didn't tell patients things. So, you couldn't do a study now because patients are told.
Mm-hmm.
And it's common sense. And one meeting when somebody was talking about my work, it wasn't me, somebody else, about preparing patients and telling them, we called it sensory information, and a doctor got up and says, well, everybody knows you should tell patients that. My postdoc sitting next to me, I thought she was going to run right up there and wring his little neck. But that he summed it up. Everybody knows that now. Nobody contested, but it really was my research that got that going. I was the one, and it developed into a theory of self-regulation, which ties in with Leventhal's theory of what he calls theory of common sense.
Now I have to ask you. We're just backing up a little bit. You came to Wisconsin, and were pretty much told you had to find your own money to come here and to stay here, which you did. Was it relatively comfortable after that? Did you feel any discrimination?
Not really, no. In fact, after they got to know me,
mm-hmm.
the students loved my fellow classmates. It was during the war, Vietnam War. God, so many wars I've lived through. The Vietnam War, and the students were alienated from their parents, you know, that era. But they still needed a mother. And I was a nice, safe mother. And I was invited to their parties, and I told them I'd go to any parties, but if they were having marijuana, I didn't want to come. I'd drink with them, but I wouldn't smoke marijuana with them. Mm-hmm. So most of the parties I was invited to, and was, you know, they was here when they were. I was writing my prelims when the weekend, the Monday after the Kent killings and the marching outside the psych. I was trying to write prelims while these students and National Guard were at each other's throats outside the psych department. And got tear gas. I was following along, and the wind changed direction. I got tear gas, but not
what
bad.
What building were you were in?
In the psych building.
Oh, yeah. So you were right in the middle of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I remember they closed off the psych building for a while and didn't let anybody in or out. And people were concerned about their data and stuff. They were going to destroy it. And I wanted to get in for something or other. And so I walked up to the front door, and of course there was this line of students interlocked. And this little girl said, "Oh, please, lady, go to the back door." So at that time I had gray hair.
Oh, I see.
And so in many ways it was, they'd like it, you know, I played a role that was acceptable to them, and the faculty members in general, I didn't have any difficulty with, even though they were all but one or two younger than I. But I think I was just so eager to learn, and I, of course, I had done quite a little bit. I'd been to Yale. I had self-confidence.
Right.
You don't get out of Yale in any program without self-confidence.
Right. When you received your PhD, and did you know at that point what you wanted to do next?
Yes. I had a grant proposal all written, 5 years, ready, and I knew it would be funded because they had been so enthusiastic about my first grant proposal, and then, you know, gave me an NRSA, right, without any problem at all, and I knew that it was better than anything else. I read the literature. I knew what everybody else was doing. Mm-hmm. I knew it would be funded. The odds were just very great.
So you could probably almost name your
position. That's what I thought I could do. But every school of nursing that I either applied to or contacted me wanted me to come to be an assistant dean or something like that, and promised to not do research.
Oh.
Even though I had this grant, and that was back when you could write 85% of your salary in. So I was taking my almost all of my salary with me. That was when there was a great deal of pressure on schools of nursing to get doctorally prepared people in their schools, but research still was not valued at all. So they didn't want to have anybody coming in there shaking up things with doing research.
Uh-huh.
But old Harriet Worley, who was an Army nurse, retired Army nurse, who had been at Walter Reed in research, was a director. She had retired, gotten her doctoral degree after she retired, and was the director of the Center for Health Research, brand new center at Wayne State. I don't know just how that got established.
I want you to talk about that, but just was the School of Nursing at Wisconsin included in that when you were saying
they didn't
nursing?
Offer me a job.
But I mean, would they have done the same thing? They wouldn't want. What was research like in the School of Nursing at that time?
Research at the School of Nursing. Now, the School of Nursing here was a very progressive school.
Oh.
But the research in here was mainly. I've been trying to think of her name. I can't think of her name. She was professor in pediatrics, extremely well known and respected, but it was all case studies and descriptive research.
I see.
And I remember I helped one of her master students, and she had numbers in it, and it was probably the first master's thesis in that school of nursing that had numbers in it, let alone, you know, anything approaching a quantitative. And of course, I was strictly quantitative. I was experimental.
Okay, just one. So we had a progressive nursing school.
Yes, and but their research was more descriptive and qualitative, and experimental research was just just incomprehensible. And research of any kind was incomprehensible everywhere else. I didn't interview or anything else here at Wisconsin. I think probably I was ready to leave, but I'm not. I know I never interviewed or anything, and I don't remember any expectations of being offered a position. So I don't recall that. I never even thought of it till now. Why didn't I stay?
Yeah. But the Wayne State position sounds like it would have been perfect.
Well, yeah, it was just so they wanted me pronto, you know. Mm-hmm. So off to Detroit I went. And that, living in Detroit was, well, I live right on the edge, but living in Detroit was a very interesting and fulfilling experience in some way. My old college roommate, where we had gone to Sioux City and suffered, lived in Detroit.
Oh, that was nice.
So we spent 9 years again. She was married and had family, but we spent 9 years again getting reacquainted. So that was very, very excellent for me. And the did laboratory work and clinical studies, but.
Did you teach also, or was it?
Yeah, I did a little dots, and they started a doctoral program the year I went.
Okay. And was that was it a faculty position?
I think I went as an associate professor, may have been an assistant. I got tenure while I was there, I think. Yeah, I was tenured.
Mm-hmm.
But as an associate professor, I didn't go up for full professor.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught in the doctoral program, supervised doctoral dissertations, and then Harriet left and I became the director of the center.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Until I left. I could look on my data, but it doesn't really matter how long I was the director.
Was that a lot of administrative responsibility?
Quite a little bit. Mainly it was trying to develop get the other people research developed and helping them develop their research.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't very successful at getting other people's research off the ground. So I was ready to get back to patients.
Okay.
And Detroit's this interesting city. I call it a carburetor mentality.
Huh?
It's dominated by the unions. And so it's just, I never lived in an industrialized city.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good learning experience again. I enjoyed Detroit, and I had no regrets about going or anything. Good experience. Then I saw this ad in Nursing Research, one of our nursing research journals, for director of the associate director for nursing in the cancer center, and professor of nursing in the School of Nursing. And I've been wanting to get into cancer research. I kept upping the threat, types of threat I studied, gastroendoscopy, and we did pelvic exams and surgical patients. Well, I was ready for the next, I thought cancer, I'd had cancer, cancer's kind of threatening. So, that would, and there was a lot of money in cancer right then. That was in 79, it was right in the height of the war on cancer.
Uh-huh.
So I applied. And And they asked me to come over for interview in February. Rochester snow was up to
here. Oh, yeah, this was University of Rochester.
New York.
Okay, yes.
The snow was up to here. And I went dressed the way I dressed every day to go to school at Wayne State, which was a charcoal gray coat, double-breasted overcoat with a red fedora hat with a feather on it. That was the era of hats. Mm-hmm. Well, I later found out I absolutely blew. The only thing they remember about my interview at the University of Rochester is that damn hat. To this day, they remember that hat. Detroit was more sophisticated than Rochester, New York. But I got the job. And I knew nothing about cancer, absolutely nothing about cancer. Because, I had been away from patients and clinical stuff for years. And
but you said you had cancer.
I had cancer, yeah. But that was a surgical procedure, and that was it. So, I was interested in it. I suppose I had, read a bit here and there. And so I learned about cancer. I went there and learned about cancer. And when I went there, there were three in the cancer center. There were three staff nurses, all reporting to physicians and all being paid off of their grants. And the director of the cancer center was very supportive of me. He really believed in nursing, and he believed in the psychological components and the kind of care that nurses give, not just the physical things they do for patients. And he really believed in it. Well, when I left, we had, I think, 30 staff nurses, and they all reported to nursing, and they were evaluated by nurses. We'd ask the doctors their opinion, but we ignored it. And I was, right in there as part of the cancer center, and I kept my research going, continued to do research, and was funded the entire time, and involved in getting the center grants renewed. My research always got the top rating, which helped a great deal, so the docs had to respect me. And I was there for 22 years. It probably took them 10 years to finally kind of agree that maybe this nurse had something to offer. But we made it. They became, slowly but surely, they accepted me as a full colleague and respected my opinions.
So it was a very successful experience for you
and the
cancer center.
And the cancer center, and very satisfying to see these nurses. I always had thought that if staff nurses had the support from their higher echelon, that they could just do wonders. And that's all I did. I just gave them support. They had the ideas. I went and got the resources and helped them with the political maneuvers to do what we needed to do. And the staff nurses and the clinical specialists developed the care. Mm-hmm. But I played the role that I thought all administrators should play, and that was provide the support and let them get the ideas and about how care should be given. And of course, they shared everything with me, so I learned a lot, and would occasionally have a little input because of my research. We find the last study we did, we taught the staff nurses in radiation therapy what we did in our interventions, our experimental interventions, and they delivered the interventions. And they, when they saw what happened with their patients, I'm as positive as I'm sitting here that's still going on in that department. Even though there are probably new nurses in there now, the new nurses had been taught by the old nurses, and And it's also the chemotherapy nurses are doing it too.
Would you say that was a model then for other centers like that? Was it looked at
yes,
as
it
a
was
model?
Looked at as a model, but then because very few places, in order to be a part of the center grant out of the National Cancer Institute, any division had to have research. It only funded research.
I see.
And when I was involved with centers, our center was just about the only center that was doing nursing research. In part because there's such a shortage of nurses to do research.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's beginning to end. But when I got my doctoral degree, I can't remember, but it had to be less than 1,000 nurses in the United States who had doctoral degrees, and at least 3/4 of those was in education or something, not the sciences. It was just 50 or 60 of us mm-hmm. in the hard science, mm-hmm. even though they didn't consider psychology. But my legacy in nursing research will be that I was amongst the very first to really do experimental research and follow up on hypotheses and until I really developed a body of knowledge,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and like scientists do. So my model was a scientific model, and that probably will be my legacy.
Mm-hmm.
But what? How did I get the? How does Sandy Ward know me?
Yes, that was good. How did you get back to this Wisconsin connection?
Well, the School of Nursing in Wisconsin wanted to start a doctoral program, and so on campus they have to, you can't just go start one.
Mm-hmm.
So the powers that be in wisdom of people trying to put this doctoral program together decided that they would put one together modeled on Gene Johnson's program.
I see. And now when was that? When did they first start talking about that and talking with you?
They didn't ever talk with me.
Oh, for God's sakes.
They talked to Leventhal.
Oh.
Leventhal was here. So they did. Now, when that started, I don't know, because
uh-huh.
I wasn't involved in it.
Uh-huh.
But it was when Sandy Ward and Mary Keller, who just died, and Linda Baum, Mary Keller, I think, was the first graduate. I just threw her obituary away, we could find out. Leventhal helped them establish the connection to the psychology department. So it was joint psychology, nursing. The dissertations had both a nurse professor and psychology professor.
I see.
They already had their nursing. They had their master's degrees in nursing, just as I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they did the psychology part of it, mm-hmm. which was what I did. I talked them into accepting my master's work from Yale as my cognate. I think I had to take one or two more courses in something to satisfy them, but
mm-hmm.
I talked them into accepting that as my cognate.
I see.
And the model that they developed. And of course by then I was already well known. I was probably already in the I was in the Institute of Medicine, and I had quite a bit of acclaim, and so it looked like a good way to go.
Right. And did you know that this you must have known things were
happening
in Wisconsin, but
I don't remember just how I got acquainted with the nurses that were involved in it, probably at some meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And we they call themselves sisters. I'll have to take you into the dirty second bedroom and show you my tree that they developed for me. But we've been close professionally.
Uh-huh.
All those first nurses that went through that program.
Uh-huh.
Linda Bauman, Mary Keller, and Sandy Ward. And they, you know, we'd get together at meetings and we, how to handle Leventhal and all that kind of stuff. You know, you got right. you got to handle your major professor.
Sure.
And so that was my that was why Sandy Ward kept referring to me
right.
was that I provided the example, the base, the protocol, the prototype, whatever is the proper term for that program. And then, of course, after a few years, the School of Nursing took it on completely. And the psych department's no longer involved.
Okay. Let's see. So you have talked about, I think, the most significant developments in your field, but are there some things that you haven't said that you'd like to add?
In the field?
In your field.
Yeah, there are two things. This, doing research with, in the health field with patients, my work was really pioneer to, and contributed significantly to the establishment of a whole new discipline called health psychology. It didn't exist. And I've been introduced as a pioneer in that field and received an award from the APA, the American Psychological Social and Health Psychology Division, for my contributions to the beginnings of the field. And so I think that that is quite significant. And the other and I think it, my work has had to have an influence in the movement of nurses studying patients. When I graduated, nurses studied nurses. Sociologists were the main people, and they were interested in the sociology of the profession of nursing. And nurses studied nurses. And if they did do anything with patients, it was only descriptive. And that's still somewhat of a problem. But at least there is more quantitative research going on now. And my work had to contribute to that movement.
And as you think back over your career, what would you consider the biggest challenges?
Biggest challenges
yeah.
I had?
Yeah.
Just being allowed to do what I wanted to do and knew I could do. Every term, you know, first it started with, no, you can't go to college. Then you can't go to doctoral school because you're 42 years old. And then you can't have a job because we don't want you doing research. You know, it just seemed every way, everywhere I turned, I can't go to, couldn't go to the University of Colorado because they didn't, I'd been a rebel.
Yeah.
You know, it just, everything I wanted to do, somebody said, no, you can't. And the reason they didn't want me, I wouldn't make a contribution. They didn't want me in the psychology department because I was too old to make a contribution. So when I got the honorary degree, I reminded them that I was, they didn't think I'd be able to make a contribution. I'm the only graduate of the psych department that ever got an honorary degree from here. but that was the biggest, it was the, and I suppose a lot of that had to do with women. And nursing, of course, I've grown up with, you can't do it, you're just a nurse.
Sure.
So all my career, it's, you know, I've always gone in with expecting to hear, no, you can't, being rebuffed.
Well, I can see why you would be then the role model for so many people that, you know, now are, well, I don't know if it's ever, it's never easy, but it's certainly, you've certainly opened a lot of doors for
Yeah, I've showed them that you can, you can buck the system and not accept the rebuffs and still survive quite well.
Well, yeah, and don't take no for an answer.
Yeah, if you want to do it, do it.
Right, right. Well, now, You came back here as a visiting professor.
Yeah.
And what did you do?
I taught a seminar.
And in your on your research?
Yeah, it was a research seminar. And it was on coping with physical illness.
Uh-huh.
I didn't do a very good job, but I did.
You know, I find that interesting. You said that. When I first started teaching, I didn't do a very good job.
I'm a lousy teacher. I'm a lousy, I'm just a terrible.
Well, you certainly are successful.
Well, I am very good one-on-one type of thing. But classroom teaching, I am just lousy. I've never mastered it, and I never will. No one ever asked me to do.
You mentioned a couple of professional associations as you were talking. Would you talk a little bit more about that? What one, the ones you were involved in, what in the what was the level of your involvement? Were they important to your career, and if so, how?
Well, in nursing, mm-hmm. back in the late 60s, early 70s, they had a Council for Nursing Research and a council and a commission. Commission was over the council. And this was in the American Nurses Association. And I was involved in that. And I went through the ranks and in the council and was president for a year or two, or chairman or whatever they called it, leader. I was the leader of that. And, you know, trying to promote research in the profession. And then I was a member of the commission for a while, too. So that was my main involvement on the national level, mm-hmm. the American Nurses Association. And I've never been involved in anything except a membership in the American Psychiatric Association. And I was there was a new organization started, the American It was for research in psychology. American Psychological Society, mm-hmm. and I was a charter member in that.
Oh.
And I was I'm a member, a fellow in the Academy of Behavioral Medicine Research. I hadn't any offices in that. And I'm also a fellow in the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And I'm also a fellow in the American Psychological Association, not just member, but fellow. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the American Academy of Nursing. Was made Living Legend last fall. And the other organization that I've been involved with is the Institute of Medicine with the National Academy of Sciences.
I see.
That's a story too. I was elected into that, let's see, when I was at Wayne State. I have the date on here. No, I don't. But when the dean went over and told the provost that I had been elected into the Institute of Medicine, and he didn't believe it. I know he didn't believe it because the dean came up to my office and had to get a copy of the letter. There was no way I'm the first professor from Wayne State to get elected in such a themed organization was going to be a nurse. Well, it was a nurse.
What happened? Did he congratulate?
Oh yes.
I would think.
Oh yes, yes. Yeah. They made a big deal out of it.
Good.
Yeah, they made a big deal out of it after they saw the letter.
Yeah.
After they saw the letter. Oh yes. Great fun. So and that I was on the council, the governing council for couple terms, I think it was, and on the membership committee for a couple of terms, and involved, you know, they do studies. They get people together and look at problems and try to make recommendations. Like one of their big things was looking at mistakes in hospitals.
Oh.
Yeah, I wasn't on that, but that it's human to err was the, and so I can't remember now what that they never amounted to much, but I was on there. They didn't make the splash like some of them did, but I was quite active in that organization, and I went to all the meetings of the Academy for Behavioral Medicine. I enjoyed, they were a small group, and I enjoyed those meetings.
Were you asked you said you were on a number of these committees. Were you asked to speak to it at these various meetings? Because from what you're saying, what you did in Rochester really was groundbreaking.
No. It wasn't appropriate.
Oh, really?
I mean, it didn't fit into their agenda.
I see. Okay.
No, it wasn't that I was overlooked or anything. No.
It just wasn't the kind of thing that was done.
That's right.
I get it.
That's right.
Okay. What about other honors and awards? Is there, I mean, you just named at least a half a dozen, but.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see.
Some of
course that
are particularly.
Yeah, I see. Well, I've been named members of the year of my University of Kansas Medical Center and Yale, and an honorary degree from Wisconsin. Nice. So all the schools I've gone to have honored me in some way. And then the Living Legend that I got last fall from the American Academy of Nursing, which is our highest sort of honorary kind of a thing in nursing. Let's see, what else do I have here? I've gotten many distinguished nursing research awards, like New York State Oncology Nursing Society and the American Nurses Association. And then the fellowships in those organizations that I mentioned.
Yeah.
The one award, which I think was quite significant, was the Outstanding Contributions to Nursing and Health Psychology from the American Psychological Association in 1993. Mm-hmm. That was sort of the recognition of my contribution to the starting of that whole discipline.
Right.
But those were the most, I think, the Institute of Medicine, of course, that just blew me away. And to the first meeting I went to at the National Academy of Science building, very few times have I been just overwhelmed, but I was really just couldn't believe I was walking into that building as a member of that organization.
Yeah.
But I did.
Yep. Very good. Well, the last set of questions really have to do with your life after work. Now you're retired.
Yeah, I think we didn't follow your questions, but I think we've done a pretty good job.
I think we did. And I want to give you time at the end. If there's anything that we haven't covered that you want to say, you know, we'll certainly give you time to say it.
What's happened to me after I finished? Well, I retired in Rochester, you know, had retired there for a couple of years, but still had an office, a professor emerita, and emeritus, female version here, and I had an office, and I stayed involved with the doctoral program, and well, I had some research that was still going for the first year or so, and but I had no family there. And so I have a niece that lives outside of Spring Green.
Oh.
And I have lots of nieces and nephews, as you might imagine. But she is the one I've been the closest to throughout the, she's the daughter of the brother that's just next to me in age, so. And I, you know, sooner or later, I'm gonna have to have some help. And as independent as I want to be, I recognize it inevitable. So in order to make it easier for them, I would come back here. And I didn't, my brother at the time was living, and not well, but living, and they had moved from Iowa City to Spring Green also to have, again, so that these, you know, midlife people didn't have to run to Iowa City with every crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And they, my sister-in-law lives in Spring Green, and I knew I wanted to live in Madison, not Spring Green. Mm-hmm. And I remember my brother was very relieved to hear that I was going to live in Madison instead of Spring Green. And I'm not sure why, but I don't think he thought I would fit in there. And I enjoy my family very much, but I've always said that 500 miles was close enough. And it's, you know, it's nice to see them, and we do we do lots and lots of things together.
Uh-huh.
And like my niece and her husband do a lot of traveling, and so if they come in late, they can come crash at my bed,
second
bedroom, and you know, stay over when I'm out there because it's quite a drive home.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I came back. Mm-hmm. That's why, and of course, being from the Midwest was not difficult to come back here. And having fond memories of Madison, knowing that it's a university town, and knowing that I would be, I wasn't in town 2 weeks until I was involved down at the School of Nursing.
Uh-huh. So are you still?
Yes, uh-huh. Yes. I go down for their research seminars. Oh. I help the doctoral students with anything they ask me to help them with.
Oh, very good.
And I write recommendations for their NRSAs. And, I'm a great, you know, they, people like to see my name there.
I'm sure.
And so I write a lot of letters of recommendation. And, but well, that's what people like me should do.
Yeah. What is your opinion of the School of Nursing today here at Wisconsin?
I don't know very much about the school except for the doctoral program.
All right. What do you think about that?
I think it's one of the top ones in the country.
Oh, that's good to hear.
There, it's a rigorous program.
Uh-huh.
Very rigorous. And they're in nursing, they're just all degrees of rigor in the doctoral program. Some that just should never graduate anybody to, you know, highly rigorous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think University of Rochester has a reputation of being having a very rigorous program. Oh, the University of Rochester's doctoral program was fashioned after my career.
Really?
Also. because one of the professors there had known me at Yale and
uh-huh.
had followed my career, and they it's, you know, both programs have evolved to be what they need to be today, but that was the base. They,
sure.
They used my career as an example of what they, to get going.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these schools are very good,
mm-hmm.
and the students are very good. I think the students here are brighter than the students in Rochester.
Mm.
You know, Rochester has trouble recruiting because of the climate.
Mm-hmm.
Both schools, if any student asked me, where should I go? I would say either one of those schools, or if they have what the people interested in what they're interested in studying,
mm-hmm.
both would be very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've come to the end of the questions, but I don't want to stop.
Oh, I haven't told you what I'm doing since I retired.
Oh,
I came back here.
Well, tell me.
I have decided I needed to do something entirely different.
Uh-huh.
And although I enjoy sewing and I enjoy family activities and I'm involved in Plato, you know, that organization that has
yeah.
discussion groups, and I've taken up watercolor painting. And I am a rank amateur, but I keep taking classes and I keep trying, and I enjoy trying.
Uh-huh.
And so I've never had any art classes in my life, not even in grade school. So it's an entirely different thing.
And it's not frustrating, it's enjoyment for you?
Well, a little frustrating at times, but since there's no product that has to be, it isn't frustrating like I get sometimes sewing when you expect a product. You
right,
know?
Right.
If it doesn't turn out, it doesn't turn out.
Mm-hmm.
And But watercolor is, everybody says, is the most challenging media you can have.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of physics to it.
Oh.
You know, how the water's going to act and the paper and the paint. And
huh.
And it looks entirely different when it dries than when it's wet. And so, and I like abstract and landscapes. So that's my, I'm quite proud of the fact that I'm trying.
Yeah, very good.
After we finish, I'll show you one of my landscapes.
Great. How about,
Other than that, family and sewing. I still make most of my clothes.
You do? Now that's a lost art, isn't it?
Yeah. I tried to find a tailor to make me a suit last year. Since I've fallen, my shape is just, you know, I can't wear my tailored clothes I used to wear. And I hadn't really conquered how to adjust things for my, and there wasn't anyone. I couldn't find anyone. Now, there is a woman who started within the last year. She was written up in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm trying to decide whether I can make it myself or whether I want her to make something for me. I haven't decided yet. But no, I make most of my clothes. I didn't make my jacket, but I made the slacks.
So all the way back in Kansas, at Kansas State, your mother and father had some good ideas there.
Well, I didn't have a ready-made dress until I went to college. We always made all of our own clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to sew. My mother taught me.
Oh, okay. So I see.
That's why I learned to sew. I didn't take textiles or sewing. I took cooking instead in my home ec classes. But I do love to sew. That has always been my relaxation and hobby. When I was working, you know, long hours, I might even just sew one seam a day or something, but because you make some.
Right. So that was also a stress buster then, too?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody needs that.
Oh, yeah. And I never remarried, so I never had the juggle of, and I didn't have any children, so I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have the juggle of work and family. Didn't have those stresses that I see other women have.
Yeah.
That was not a problem for me. So that's...
Anything else there in your notes that we haven't covered that we want to get on the tape?
No, I don't think so. I think you've just about got every fact you could probably get out of me.
Well, I really appreciate this. This was... very, very interesting interview, and certainly important to the record that we're trying to build for the history of University of Wisconsin-Madison, what's gone on. You have a unique position there, much appreciated.
My papers are in the archives at the University of Rochester.
I saw that, yeah.
And so the cross-reference of this with that would be...
Right. Well, we do keep a file, and so I took something off of the University of Rochester website about the fact that your papers are there, and I will ask them to put that in the file in the Oral History Project Office, because I think that is important to know.
I have a young colleague, well, she's not so young anymore, she was young when I first knew her, who is a historian, and she was the one who just beat me over the head and said, your papers have to be... archived.
Yeah.
And so I did.
Yeah, well, we'll put a record of that in your file so that people know that.
Someday, some nurse doing a history of nursing project will probably be interested.
Absolutely. If they aren't already, I'm sure they...
Anybody contacted me? Yeah.
No. Well, as I said, I heard your name so many times the other day, so I can't believe it won't take long for that to happen.
Well, yeah, it's known across the country.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, I sometimes go to meetings or even something where a social where there might be a nurse that has nothing to do with nursing, and I'm introduced, and they'll say, "DJ Johnson."
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
There is one more honor received by Dr. Johnson relative to the University of Wisconsin-Madison that must be included in this recorded interview. In 1998, Dr. Jane Johnson received an honorary Doctor of Science degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. This is the same year that Tenzin Gyatso, the 14th Dalai Lama, received an honorary degree from UW-Madison.